I want to read you a poem that is a little more extended, but I hope that it's not a difficult poem to listen to because it keeps changing its subject. You know? So if you get tired of one part of it, you can have faith that there's another train coming in a minute, you know, and you can get on that one. I need to tell you a couple of things about it. It refers, first of all, to the aftermath of Hurricane Bob a couple of years ago in New England, which was sort of diluted by the time it got to us, but there was still enough of it to really do a number on my town. It stripped every leaf off of the trees so that, and this was August, so when it was over, it suddenly looked like the middle of winter, except that everything was covered with this kind of substance like pesto. It was like shredded leaves and salt all over everything, which took a lot of scrubbing to get rid of. The grass was black. The trees were completely leafless. And about a month later, things began to bud again, so that by October, the lilacs were in bloom, and the chestnut trees had fruit and flowers at once. And it was a very disorienting time. And that gets talked about here. The poem also talks about some music of Beethoven's, one of the late quartets, which I don't know enough about music to describe this very accurately, but to my ear, this music sounds very different from anything else of its era. It sounds quite modern, intimate, and rather dissonant, and without that kind of feeling of balance or order, but much more tempestuous. Originally, one of these late quartets, I think it's Opus 130, had a piece at the end called the Grosse Fuga, the Great Fugue. And when it was first performed, the audience hated it so much that Beethoven threw off that ending and wrote something much more acceptable. Today, sometimes it's performed with that. That notion of trying to listen to that difficult music is part of this poem, too, as is the idea of a fugue where themes are stated and turned around. Finally, the poem talks about a friend of mine's illness, his struggle in particular with AIDS-related dementia. There is a discussion of an MRI, which is a magnetic resonance imaging, sort of a high-tech way of photographing the inside of the body, in this case the brain. I don't know if there's anything else I need to say about this. It's a little bit of Sanskrit, getting very fancy here. You'll know it when you hear it. I hope. Okay. So have faith. Only two more poems. This is next to the last. It's called Grosse Fuga. This October morning, soft lavender bursts above the Plymouth, parked on the neighbor's lawn. Lilacs, wildly off schedule, decking themselves a second time. Downtown, on the universalist green, the chestnuts drop their sleek mahogany under lantern branches, tallowy blooms. Season of contradictions, tempest wrought. Summer's hurricane battered each branch bare, skies suddenly wider, space in heaven opened. Our garden scoured as if by frost. The little stars, jewel fires, more consuming. That was August. But all at once, we wanted to unpack sweaters, wrap ourselves in warm, saturated tones, gems and harvest, torched leaves. But when real autumn came, the calendar down to its last late pages, the world displayed its strange dependability in disarray, rekindling. Crocus quickened, spiking to the fallen leaves, then cherry and box alder budded out, and now this rash, breathtakingly sudden bloom. Bobby arrives on a Saturday and sits on the end of the couch, scarlet parka and a red Jamaican hat fished from the closet, pulled tight. Why is he so cold? This false spring? No, he looks, how to say it, small. Not just his circumstances, but him, somehow reduced. His landlord doesn't want him back. His sisters dropped him on the side of the highway at a rest stop, his clothes in three flowered yellow pillowcases. My mother, he says, doesn't want me crying in the house. She doesn't want my tears around. She fed him on paper plates, kept his laundry separate, and didn't tell his father the diagnosis. We say, of course he can stay. And Sunday, he wakes up saying, I have four things inside me. A backyard going around and around in my head this way. Lawn furniture spinning the other way. And right here in my chest, chairs. It's not that they hurt. It's that I can't figure how I'm going to get them the fuck out. He never says just what the fourth thing is. This month, the new comes so dizzyingly quick it coexists with all autumn's evidence. By the marsh, the usual sumptuous russets sparked by pointillist asters. Rugosas dot the goldenrod's velveteen. Tulips sprout the crab leaves out. How are we to read this nameless season? Renewal? Promise? Confusion? Should we be glad or terrified at how quickly things are replaced? Never again the particulars of that August garden, waving cosmos, each leaf's crisp darkness in relief against the stars. No way to know what's gone. Only the new flowerings, the brilliance that candles after rain, every day assuming its position in the huge, gorgeous hurry of budding and decline. Bloom against dry leaf, unreconciled sorts of evidence. I have been teaching myself to listen to Beethoven, or trying to, learning to hear the late quartets. How hard it is to apprehend something so large in scale and yet so minutely detailed. Like trying to familiarize yourself exactly with the side of a mountain. This birch, this rock pool, this square mosaic yard of tesserated leaves, autumnal, a jeweled reliquary. Trying to see each element of the mountain and then through them, the whole, since music is only given to us in time, each phrase parceled out in time. Thursday, he says, all night I had to make Elizabeth Taylor's wedding cake. It was a huge cake, with nine towers, all of them spurting like fountains, and she didn't like it. And I had to make it again. Then the thing was, it wasn't really a cake anymore. I am trying to understand the Grosse Fuge, though I'm not sure what it might mean to understand this stream of theme and reiteration, statement and return. What does it mean? Chaos gathered into a sudden bronze sweetness, an autumnal flourish, and then that moment denied, turning acid, disassembling, questioning, rephrased. MRI. Charcoal flowers, soft smudges, the image that is Bobby, or Bobby's head, or rather a specific plane bisecting his head, pictured on video, cinematic, rich inky blacks threaded by filaments and clouds. I stand behind the door and watch the apparition taking form beyond the silhouette of the technician who wore gloves to touch him, fully clothed, dry, harmless, but the coward wrapped himself in latex charms anyway to ward off the black angel. On the screen, like a game, he makes a Bobby of light, numbers, and images, imagines? Bobby as atoms of hydrogen, magnetic, aligned, so that radio waves transmitted toward the body bounce back, broadcasting this cold smudged sketch, brain floating on its thick stem, and little strokes of dark everywhere, an image I can't read and wasn't supposed to see. But who could stay away from the door? Which of these darknesses, if any, is the one which makes his bed swim all night with boxes, insistent forms, repeated, rearranged? In one of those, he says, is the virus, a box of AIDS. And if I open it, I bring home, from each walk to town, pockets full of chestnuts, and fill a porcelain bowl with their ruddy, seducing music, something like cellos, something that banks deep inside the body. The chestnuts seem lit from within, almost as if by lamplight, and burnished to warm leather, the color of old harnesses. I have four bottles, cut glass cologne bottles, right here under my ribs, by my heart. Can you tell the doctor? I can't. He doesn't like me. Scribbled notes. Opus 130. First movement. Everything rises. Broken open by the force of feeling it contains, tumbling out into moments of intense punctuation, like blazing sumac, goldenrod, so densely interwoven in the field, I can't keep any of it separate for long. Pattern of cadence spilling out, forward, then cessations. Like seeing, in jeweled precision, exact, wet, and startlingly there, oak leaves and birch and exclamations of maple, the flecked details of the piebald world, seeing it all, taking it in, and yet rising up to see it once whole forests. Is that it? All my work of listening? And have I only learned that Beethoven could see the forest and the trees? Bobby cries on the couch. All I want is one head. Later, my head and my legs are one thing. Over breakfast. Please, you've got to tell me the truth now, no matter what. Swear. The boxes, do they ever hold still? They're driving me crazy with their dancing. Mostly, he looks away, mouth open, as if studying something slightly above and to the right of the world. The music is like lying down in that light which gleams out of chestnuts, the glow of oiled and rubbed mahogany, of burled walnut, bird's eye maple polished into incandescence, autumn's essence of brass and rosin, bronze and apples, the evanescence, brisk smoke. But how is a quartet, abstract thing, passionate, autumnal, fitful, gleaming, regretful, hesitant, authoritative, true? Is any listening an act of translation, a shift of language? Even the music words themselves may make? Flutter of pendant birch leaves. Then I pull myself back from the place where the music has brought me. The music is not leaves. Music is not Bobby's illness. Music itself is always structure, redolent, suggestive occasion, a sort of scaffold which supports the branching of attention. After the flood of detail the quartet conjures, nothing. The great block of silence which the fugue has defined around itself. When I was 17, and everyone I knew acquired a new vocabulary, mantra, sutra, Upanishad, I learned the chant in Sanskrit. Gate, gate, paragate is all I can remember of the words, but the translation goes gone, gone, beyond gone, altogether beyond gone. And that is where the music has gone, and Bobby's going. Though not today. Not yet. AZT is a toxic, limited miracle. And Bobby's in the kitchen, banging the tea kettle, cursing the oatmeal. The first time he's been up in weeks. Last night, when a Supreme song graced the radio, he suddenly rose, quaffed in his blanket, and lip-synced 20 seconds of blessed, familiar drag routine. He's well enough to be a bitch, to want a haircut and a shave. Still too sick to go home, wherever that might be. And too ill, as well, to stay. The truth is, we can't live in such radical proximity to his dying. But not today. In the wet black yard, October lilacs. Misplaced fever? False flowering, into the absence the storm supplied. Flower of the world's beautiful will to fill space, always to take up space, hold a place for the possible. A little flourish, a false spring. What can I do but echo myself, vary and repeat? Where can the poem end? What can you expect? In a world that blooms and freezes all at once, there is no resolution in the fugue.